the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else. Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else. Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else. Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else.
Me and Tommy together's like P-Rock. I see L Smooth, a DJ Premier with Guru. Yo, it's tangible. We too hard, you can't handle us. Hate paparazzi in the camera. The cypher that took out my leader with a rifle. Insurance went down on blacks just like Geico. We fight for the dream amongst some other things. The smoke out the lobby and evacuate the scene. I stretch like miracle veins when I bang. For the money, they all go bonkers in the same. This Michigan hip-hop, legendary and tip-top. Driving down the 131, rolling the black like I'm vigilant. Look at the time and know it's serious. Music should sound like this so you can feel it. The pillage, need more OGs to raid the village. Young and back talk, they need to get cracked with the skill.
Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else. Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else. Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else. Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else.
Yo, I speak braggadocious. Lyrically, I'm ferocious. Niggas leave with broken backs and cornucopia. Assist me. You couldn't do nothing but piss me off like the light. We illuminate the dark. A gun room pioneer just like a lot of dark. Man, I kill ya if you ain't familiar. Raised by drug dealers and live with addicts. Kept my mind open and focused on nothing else. The pressure was cooking me. Cops kept booking me. Niggas was feeling my music and lining would look at me. Sharp like a blade. Cut the color of Kool-Aid. Drips out the body faster than it fades. Bitch, you better walk that plane. Get off our shit. Cause dudes like you can get hit with AR clips. Consistent, relentless, a little bit brilliant. Travel back home, still fought on the first day.
Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else. Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else. Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else. Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else.
Yo, raw, uncut, saliva from the gut. Abrupt, your weight just ain't heavy enough. Yo, we rockin' Nova Scotia, back to North Dakota. Shout out to my nigga Dula, real street soldier. Connect like bonds, I pie, I good like mine. The rebel, transform like Decepticon. It's nobody with me, just me or by myself. It goes down, then it's just me or by myself. Swing the axe, knock him down like a lumberjack. This is how we was raised in my habitat. Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Can't risk getting locked down with no bell. Dumb, hit your chest like a bass drum. Cause there's no evidence of facts when the case comes. Watch the news and you still misinformed. You don't watch the news and you left uninformed. I'm gone. I'm gone.
Good morning, everyone. How is everyone today? Thank you for being a part of Vertical Life Radio. Today, our program is a culture of poetry. And that intro was by the real six man called Eyes Wide. He's one of our featured indie artists for this month on Vertical Life Radio. And we appreciate the music, Six Man. So our quote today is, without culture and the relative freedom it implies, society, even when perfect, is but a jungle. This is why any authentic creation is a fit for the future. And that was by Albert Camus. And thank you, Team Vertical, for setting up this program today. So I'd like to introduce my co-host today, who is Patrick Anthony Howell. He is a poet, a writer, an entrepreneur, and he's also the co-purveyor of the Global International African Arts Movement. So I'd like to welcome Patrick to another great program today. How are you doing, Patrick?
Hey, hey, Celeste. Good morning. Top of the day. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. I am so great today.
All right. I'm hearing
I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited about who's on the program today, especially we've had some great programs this month for National Poetry Month. And actually, you know, we don't just do this on Poetry Month, so we will be continuing throughout the year introducing some great poets and writers and creative individuals on Vertical. So, Patrick, who will be in our program today?
Yeah, I'd like to introduce our show today by doing a little segue first. I've written a bunch of pieces for the Huffington Post, focusing specifically on ancient and historical forms of poetry, of which all three of our guests today, one of our guests was unable to attend due to a conflicting schedule. But specifically, these forms of poetry come from antiquity, just as the Bible or the Holy Quran, some of the best-selling books in world history, and really speak to the power of words and really match it with a melody and a rhythm. So to that, I'd like to introduce some djembe drum players in the Paris subway that will accompany me as I introduce not only this segment but also our poets. So I'll go with that. And so this is from the Huffington Post where I wrote, "There is a space, a place in the world where pure poetry, serious poetry will sift light from dark, steep reality thick with dreams and visions, and form new consciousness. There is a place in existence where the utterance of words with certain intention, composition, and musicality will shift reality, change being, places where mendacity of life is lifted and words reveal all of the beauty that is in the balance to our unbearable pain. There is a place where poems are part of dreams, reality, and every utterance in between, places where the wealthy bathe in poetry and words are currency. And yes, places where poems are better, more powerful than any movie ever produced. Welcome to National Poetry Month. We are proud to present three such poets today, and Pakistan is one such place where poetry has this power. All sorts of poems and poetry forms. It's like a university of poetry in Pakistan." Excuse me. "There is Urdu, written in the calligraphy style of the Persian-Arabic script. There is Nazam poetry, and it's wild, except where philosophy is concerned, and written in rhymed verse. There is Hamad, a poetic piece of praise in praise of God, not in ghazals. Shadab Zist Hashmi is an American poet of Pakistani origins. Her poetry, written in English, has been translated into Spanish and Urdu. She has been the editor of the Maji Park Poets Anthology and Mamag. Hashmi's essays on poetic forms such as ghazal and qasida have appeared widely, as have her essays on Arabic-American issues. She is currently touring the U.S. and world for her work with Ghazal Cosmopolitan, out by Jakar Books. Chloe Martinez has mined South Asian and Indian religions to remake the ancient modern. Chloe Martinez received the MFA for Writers from Warren Wilson College, the MA in Creative Writing from Boston University, and a PhD in Religious Studies from UC Santa Barbara. She teaches mainly on the religions of South Asia and Claremont McKenna College. Her poetry has appeared in journals including The Normal School, The Collagist, The Courtland Review, and Crab Orchard Review, and she has been nominated for the Pushcart Prize. Her forthcoming work, Palace Gates, will be released later on this year. Born in Detroit, poet Tiemba Jess earned his BA from the University of Chicago and his MFA from New York University. He is the author of the 2005 Lead Belly and Olio in 2016, the winner of the 2017 Pulitzer Prize. Olio recognizes that many of the founding black voices of our country, Scott Joplin, Booker T. Washington, Tom Wiggins, Paul Lawrence Dunbar, Millie and Christine McCoy, Edmonia Lewis, are the forebearers to pop and black culture today, which, if you listen to a young Senator Obama tell it, is American culture. Welcome all of you to our show. We'd like to begin by having you go in the order just mentioned, so we'll begin with Shadab, and have you briefly introduce yourself and recite a work of poetry.
Thank you. Thank you, Patrick. It's lovely being with you all today, and I look forward to listening to all the poets. I'm going to share a ghazal, one of the new ghazals that I've written since my book came out a few months ago. And this ghazal, I'm going to briefly describe the ghazal form. It's a poem that's written in couplets. So two lines strung together, couplets strung together, and it's usually, the length of the poem is usually from five couplets to as many couplets. There is no upper limit, but a minimum of five couplets. And there is a refrain and an internal rhyme. So I'm going to read my poem in the traditional Urdu style, and you will hear the refrain. The refrain is house in this poem, and the internal rhyme that you'll hear is light. And so you'll also hear a signature couplet, which is the very last couplet, and you'll hear my name, Zeist. So my middle name is Zeist, and that's what I use as the nom de plume that occurs, that is customary to use in the signature couplet.
I love it.
Okay.
Yeah, I do too.
Thank you. So here goes. After the storm, the sinking of keys, salted passport and bridal dress, the lighthouse. After the storm, the sinking of keys, salted passport and bridal dress, the lighthouse. Docked in the hemisphere of exiles, we married the spinning beam of the lighthouse. No respite from paperwork. We file and file ourselves away, ghosting into forms. No respite from paperwork. We file and file ourselves away, ghosting into forms. Imagination, you say, is the true domicile, but who can tell what it might house? Outside the haunted nursery, rusted seesaw, oxeye daisies, mad glare, doll jaw. Outside the haunted nursery, rusted seesaw, oxeye daisies, mad glare, doll jaw. Night guard's jigsaw, betrayal of breadcrumbs blowing away from the right house. The famed rugs are Persian, the tick-tocking clock numerals Arabic, porcelain Chinese. The famed rugs are Persian, the tick-tocking clock numerals Arabic, porcelain Chinese. We, the people, brown, black, yellow, are pepper-sprayed in front of the White House. The unexplained scent of guavas in California autumn, lock of hair in the dictionary. The unexplained scent of guavas in California autumn, lock of hair in the dictionary, monsoon green shimmer on the door. Beast, have you found yourself a Sprite house? And that's the end of it.
I love it.
Thank
beautiful.
You.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you very much, Shadab. And so that's a form of ghazal poetry that Shadab has been reading, not only domestically in the U.S., as she's been in Florida and other places reciting at conferences, but also around the world, as far out as Morocco, to understand it in recent times. Thank you very much, Shadab. So for the next piece, we're going to go to Chloe Martinez, who will recite her poem.
Hi, Shadab, that was so lovely. And hi, Patrick. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Thanks for having me here. It's so nice to be with you all. Okay, I'm going to read a poem called Taj Mahal. We all know the Taj Mahal very well. This poem comes a little bit out of the experience of visiting the Taj, which is, you know, it's a tomb, it's a touristical site, and it's also become a real site of political contestation in India. Because it's both a symbol of India, it's a sort of a symbol of nationalism, but it's also an Islamic site. And many in the government of India currently think that India should be a Hindu nation. So what does that mean for the Taj Mahal? Is it Indian enough? And this poem also comes out of my reading an article about pollution in India, which is a major problem these days. And one thing that I read about the Taj is that the marble, the white marble that the Taj is built out of, is actually being corroded just by the breath of so many visitors coming into this small central space of the inner area. So just, you know, the fact of its importance is making this building fall apart. So here's the poem, Taj Mahal. He built it for his dead wife, Mumtaz Mahal, the guides explain. They paint a picture of Shah Jahan, the grieving widower, the romantic, the tyrant who had the eyes of the imperial architects put out after the work was done. All of this may or may not be true. the guides enjoy the story. The tourists trail behind them in the swelter of the afternoon and are instructed where to snap pictures for best effect and where to leave their shoes outside the tomb. They do not learn how Mumtaz died after giving birth to her 14th child. She was buried three times, once in Burhanpur, where she died, once temporarily in Agra while the tomb was being built, then here, at last, in the cool center of the Taj, all breeze and marble, her body finally left alone. Outside, long reflecting pools try to contain the white dome, the huge Mughal doorways. Beside the water, a Tibetan monk on holiday stands on a marble bench, one hand extended, as if to hold up the Taj, its finial between two fingers. Another monk, his friend, stands in the right spot to photograph this old illusion. Then they switch places. In the background, the Yamuna River flows, brown and polluted, beside the marble pavilion. There is no point in photographing such a thing. The monks go off to join the jostling, shoeless queue that narrows as it nears an open doorway, as people crowd into the dim chamber that grows warm with their breath, that echoes with voices, moving through like wind in many careless languages. That's
wow.
It. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gorgeous.
Thanks.
Yeah, beautiful. I mean, I love how you take something that's ancient and timeless, really, and just make it contemporary, relevant to the here and now. It's beautiful, mm-hmm. Chloe. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Great.
And then last but not least, Mr. Tiemba Jess, who has just won the Pulitzer Prize for his work, Olio, in 2017, and has been reading, just relocated actually from Chicago to Brooklyn, and is now teaching up that way and spreading the story of the early 19th century pop culture, American pop culture, before there was any sort of recordings, before there was Motown, before there was Kanye West. Before there was Michael Jackson, Prince, there was the artists that are featured in Olio, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show today, sir.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hi.
Okay, great.
Great to have you on.
Well, it's good to be here, and thank you for inviting me on the show. I guess I should share a poem, perhaps. It's been a pleasure listening to the poems before. Should I read a poem?
Please do.
Yes.
Please do.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. All right. this poem is in the voice of a guy named Blind Boone. Blind Boone was a piano player. He was born in 1865, and 6 months after he was born, he got encephalitis, which is swelling of the brain. And the remedy to relieve the pressure on his brain was removal of the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
This is entitled Blind Boone's Blessings.
Okay.
Bless the fever in that night, in the sixth month of my life. Bless the fever, for it gave me sight. It swole my brain to fit God's gift. It brought the hand that would lift each eye from my infant skull. Bless the sweat, my baby ball. Bless the horse that hauled through the surgeon through dusk dark, half drunk and swearing into mine. Bless the flame. It sterilized the metal of the spoon. Bless the path between lid and bone, slipped and slid by that instrument of my deliverance from sight. Bless the handling of the knife. Bless that knife. They gave me night, wrapped around my bloody face, whisper how I could be grace notes, arpeggios, a piano roll of sound, copying each note from everything around me. You see, I'm sure at first there was the hurt and the scalding pain, but then again, bless an infant's too short memory. All I know is what lies beyond light. I've learned this is what's right for this one right here. Yes. Bless the fever. Then listen close. Spare an ear to this piano and shut your eyes closed.
I love it.
Wow.
So good.
That was great.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
thank you.
Brian Boone has a voice relevant and contemporary to the right now. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Well, it's a pleasure to hear all of you. It's a pleasure to hear your work as well, and to have you on our program today. So we have some questions for you, and I would say that when you answer, if you want to answer the question, just identify who you are and answer the question. I'm not going to turn off the mics. So we can just kind of let this flow as a conversation.
Okay.
So again, welcome everyone, and thank you for being here. And so the first thing I wanted to start it off with today, because we've had numerous programs this month on National Poetry Month, but today our kind of our topic was, when you feel the role of poets and poetry is today in our culture. So anyone can jump out there and start.
The role of poets in today's culture?
Yes, the role of poets in poetry.
The role of poets, okay.
Well, I could start by saying that with the other form, I've discovered that when I was researching the book and writing these essays, I discovered that a poetic form can give us a cultural bridge. And at the moment, in our present moment of history, that's what we need. We need cultural bridges. We need to come together as people. And as a poet, I feel very proud that this bridge, a sort of like a spiritual, social bridge, can actually come out of a poetic form. And the rest of you can elaborate on this. You know, how you feel that the poetic forms that you enjoy, or the themes or the cultural language of your choice, makes that bridge for us as people. So any of you can take it from there.
Sure, I'll chime in. Oh, yeah, I'll chime in. I agree. I think the guzzle is a great sort of bridge form, as you've said, because it has this long history in the Middle East and South Asia, but it's now, you know, in recent decades been written by American poets in English. And
right.
I think it's interesting how the kind of political moment that we're in right now, to me, makes poetry, makes art in general seem more urgent. You know, the idea that poets and artists are people who kind of stand within society, or maybe on the fringe, and are able to comment on what's going on, or able to both sort of record the language of the moment, but also kind of use art to make political statements, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, poetry has always done that, but I think there's so much great political poetry that's being written right now, and that seems more urgent than ever.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, yes. So was the question about form or about poetry?
The question is, I think that there's always been, as you know, as far as creating bridges, there's always been in the creative process, poetry's always been a part of that. Poetry's been a part of our society in a way to give voice to maybe things that maybe the normal man. Probably wouldn't say, and poetry is giving a voice to that. Poetry is giving a voice to things in such a way to create, or even I would say to shape and transform individuals. You know, looking at our younger people coming up, it's been a way to educate where it's more acceptable, because it is a bridge. It is a bridge, and it bridges all cultures, and it bridges all art form, actually. There is an understanding that comes through poetry that may not come through just by reading a book or reading a story or seeing the news. It's kind of a heartbeat. I feel poetry is a heartbeat of culture. So my question, when I said, what is the role? And this is something that I usually say to individuals that I have on the program, When you're talking about your purpose, and if your purpose is poetry, because I believe that creative people do have a gift. So if your gift is about, you know, if your gift is your purpose, then what is your responsibility within that purpose? So what is your responsibility in your poetry, in your art form, or even in your, or even your role as a poet in today's culture? So is that role, you know, is that role making people aware? Is that role in creating something that people can read and feel like there's some type of hope in, you know, what's going on around them? Is it something that it's a call to action to activate individuals into doing something?
Well, if I can, I think what I would say in regards to that is, one, is whenever you say that poetry is going to be about this and that and the other, you're going to have a whole bunch of renegade poets that are going to rebel against that. And they're going to be of what you said was going to happen. So that's number one. And that's part of that is a testament to the experimental nature of poetry. Poetry is has the most capacity for experimentation, and poetry doesn't have to be narrative, doesn't have any expectations attached necessarily to a poem when you enter it. You could expect to just be bathed in sound and color, or you could expect to hear a narrative, or you could expect to hear both of those things at the same time. It can be all over the page, and it can be just on one side of the page, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the good thing. The great thing about poetry is it's a great field of experimentation that you can work from within poetry. And in terms of form, going back to what was said earlier, when you engage in form, you're engaging in the history of that form. You're engaging in like the hustle is what, 1,000 years old, and it goes across cultures. And when you're bringing that tradition all the way up into the 21st century, and you're in the line with all the other people in that form, and you're adding on a new sensibility to the form with what you have created in that form. We see this as a very difficult and very special political moment right now. I mean, I'm calling from the United States, where we have a president that has broken new barriers in terms of incompetency and in terms of irascibility and his ability to throw temper tantrums, et cetera. But we see this as a very difficult political moment. But I would suggest that people in the 1960s saw that as a very different and very serious political moment. It's always an urgent moment. It's always an urgent moment. And I think the thing that poetry does, especially when it's working well, is it works past time, and it works through the ages in order to get let us understand the urgency of the issues of that particular time. So, yes. It is about being political, and it is about being all of those things that are urgent to us. And it's also about the very, very, very personal and minute and small at the same time. And that's the great thing about poetry, is that someone can come into it and just come out in so many different in so many different directions. But when it's done well, then people remember it the next day, and it becomes hard.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, as demonstrated by Shadab, Chloe, and Tiembe on today's show. I mean, the specific form of the ghazal, of talking about the Taj or talking about Blind Boon, all have universal application. The more specific that you are in your narration and what you're talking about, the more universal it is. And I would also note that poetry in and of itself has a it has a musicality to it. It has a rhythm to it that's uttered that is not in the common vernacular. So it's literally at higher frequencies, and we receive it at a higher frequency. And so there's a musicality to that. There's a spirituality to that. There's almost a metaphysics to poetry that doesn't exist in the regular vernacular of everyday conversation.
Yes.
Yeah. And Yeah, I was going to add that, you know, when you talk about the poet's responsibility, I can speak for myself and say that, you know, I tend to be, I don't know about you guys, but I tend to be a hermit, and I like to be by myself and read and write. And when it comes to responsibility, I think at the moment, it's important for us to use our voices. And poetry is about the voice and the spirit. And that was Taima's point, too, that it's about your individual spirit, and it's about how you can convey a communal spirit, you know, if you choose to. But and again, it also goes back to being a bridge, is that it's a moment of we have a desperate need for communication on, you know, spirit communication, because as much as we appreciate poetry on the page, I think this is a moment where we need to have voices, you know, speak their poems, and you know, this is a moment very much for performing poetry and for being attentive listeners of poetry. So when we talk about form, and we talk about these ancient forms, all of the ancient forms were part of the oral culture. And there was an active listening going on with the oral culture, you know. The ghazal comes from a tradition of the Qasida poem, which was a very long poem that Bedouins would recite as they traveled in their caravans. And each caravan would have a poet who would compose a long poem, you know, would spend the whole day composing a poem. And when the caravan would stop for the night, the poet would recite this long poem under the night sky, and people would listen and memorize these poems. And so the ghazal comes from this long Qasida poem. And again, the tradition is it covers everything from the court to pop culture to, you know, political poetry and spiritual mystical poetry, as well as humorous poetry and you know, romantic poetry. So it really covers all aspects of the human experience. You know, when we talk about political poetry or the present political moment, one way to deal with that is a very apolitical way, which is just reminding ourselves again and again of our shared humanity. Yes, you know, we are political beings living in a political moment, but we are also beings that appreciate humor and appreciate, you know, spiritual themes and so on. So poetry is all of that, and I think again, to repeat what I just said, the responsibility we have at the moment is to be out there a little bit more than we tend to allow ourselves.
I think all of that is so well said, and I also want to follow up what Tayamba said. I think it's true, even though I think a lot of us feel, you know, that this is this urgent political moment. Of course, politics have always been urgent for poets. Social issues have always been urgent for poets, but it is the potential for the personal and the specific and the weird and, you know, the multiplicity of forms or no form that poetry offers that makes poetry so powerful to talk about these things, right? Often the political gets talked about in poetry, not by somebody making an explicit statement, but by showing a new perspective, right? Repeating an experience that maybe the reader hasn't had. It's poetry's ability to show us that immense multiplicity of experiences and perspectives that I think makes it so powerful for talking about the political. The other day, last weekend at the LA Festival of the Books, I was helping out at the booth for this literary journal called Rhino. And one of the things they were doing at Rhino was they were raising funds by offering to write custom poems on the spot. So whoever was there, you know, there was a typewriter and people would walk up and say, okay, you know, for $5, write me a poem about something. And it was really interesting. I spent a couple hours there writing custom poems. People would walk up and they would ask for poems on these abstract concepts, right? People would say, I want a poem on resilience. I want a poem about love. I want a poem about personal growth. And then you say, well, okay, I don't really know how to write a poem about that. Tell me something else. You know, tell me something specific about yourself. Tell me what you did this morning. Tell me something weird, right? And it would be in that conversation about the specifics that I would be able to probably not write them an amazing poem doing it in 15 minutes, you know, it's a draft. But to be able to write something that was in some way useful and could maybe speak to that abstract concept that they were thinking of, but you don't write a poem about resilience by saying resilience, right? You write it by talking about an experience.
So don't settle.
That's interesting.
I think it's interesting. I'm sorry, Celeste. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Patrick.
No, I was going to say I think it's interesting that we're talking about this political moment in which we all are, which is the antithesis of anything that's really spiritual. I mean, we have the ultimate capitalist, you know, occupying the office of the White House and kind of lording that over the world. And there could almost be an argument made that you know, really, he's not really so much, you know, leading as he is entertaining while the money's being made. And I find it interesting that all the callers on the show today, without exception, are all steeped in the world of education. They're all poet professors. That are giving rise to, you know, the antithesis of materialism, which is educating your mind, feeding your soul. Even myself, you know, having completed my work of poetry lately, even as I am steeped in that world of capitalism myself, you know, both of my parents are professors. And a lot of times when I'm doing the work that I do, it goes back to the teachings that I had from them long before I was steeped in this world. So, you know, there's an interesting collection of folks that are on this conversation right now, that are poets, but really, you know, part of a tradition, going back to Tiembe's point, going back to Chloe's point, going back to Shadab's point, that is beyond any of our individual lives, any of our individual calls. It goes back to the beginning of time, and we're just carrying that tradition forward. And as Shadab said, it's more important for these voices to be heard and listened to, and to bridge community than at any given time point in history. So I think there's an interesting commonality on this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, great point, Patrick. My next question is, which poets alive or dead do you feel are underrated?
I'm gonna say one name right quick, Wanda Coleman. Coleman out of Los Angeles had a lot of books, tremendous voice and impact. I mean, I know she had an impact on me, and there's a lot of people that know about Wanda Coleman, but she never, you know, people never really, in my mind, appreciated Wanda for what she did with her work. You know, there's just nobody like Wanda Coleman when Wanda was doing Wanda, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, Wanda Coleman off the top.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
I'm going to say Amiri Baraka, and I think, you can discuss that or elaborate on it. I think Amiri Baraka, and I'm going to add that apart from being poets who've been neglected or who've been underrated, but also poets have been misunderstood and you know, taken out of context. And I'm going to say one of the Urdu poets, a very well-known Urdu poet who is actually also a world poet, he was sort of a mystic successor of Rumi, His name was Allama Iqbal, and he's, you know, he's very well known in the Urdu phone world. He's been misunderstood as, and as a Muslim, I feel very strongly about poets whose work is taken out of context, and poets, you know, who are sort of removed from their political moment, and you know, whose words are sort of misinterpreted, often deliberately misinterpreted. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that that happens too, where poets who are speaking about a political moment in a passionate way can be mistranslated, misinterpreted, or, you know, even demonized by people who are, you know, who would rather not, who don't agree with their with what they were about. So
Okay. I like what you said. Well, I like what you said as far as being misinterpreted. I think that does happen a lot. Unfortunately, it happens a lot.
Right, and I think it usually from what I've done some work on silencing of poets as well, like on the silencing of political poetry, and you know, it just turns out to be something that's not a force, a mainstream force that's not very hard to come about. That can happen very easily to a poet who's actually saying something in the spirit of solidarity, in the spirit of humanity, you know, and justice. But it's easy to turn that around and turn it against that poet. So it's very alarming that poets who are actually, you know, that's the nature of poetry, because poetry is often elliptical. You know, you have to make your own meaning out of it. And if you know the subtext, then you know what the poet was talking about. But the same word can be used, you know, against the poet. And so, I mean, I guess the rest of you are more qualified to talk about it than I am. But I think you know what I'm talking about.
Right. I do. Yeah, I do.
Interesting. I can't remember now if the question was about a living poet or not, but a poet that I think of always as sort of underappreciated is Robert Hayden, who I think is one of the great, great 20th century poets that I think doesn't get talked about that much anymore. And I think a living poet who I think is now getting lots of recognition but wasn't for a long time, maybe getting as much as she should have. I think, you know, Patricia Smith just won all the awards with her recent book, but I think she has been working with less recognition for a long, long time. So she's now getting, I think, some much-deserved accolades.
Patricia is my colleague, and I've known about Patricia back in Chicago, like about 20-odd years ago. But I always knew that she was an amazing poet, and it's true. She's just now getting the accolades she deserves.
Yes.
Well, definitely there's been a little bit of a shift, I think, as a new poet in the last few years, because it's interesting that people will pick probably the most notable poets to recite, especially lately, rather than pulling out I've discovered some poets that I didn't know was out there, and I'm like, their work is just awesome. It reminds me of, growing up in California, how we would go back east to visit family, and we would hear music that we hadn't heard before. And you know, so you would have music played on the East Coast or on the West Coast, but you would never have, you know, you would rarely hear East Coast music on the West Coast and West Coast music on the East Coast. So it's almost interesting with some creative works, and especially In my time at being a host on the radio, I've interviewed artists and different people in the creative world, and it's interesting how it's still a little bit of segregation going on between, you know, East Coast, West Coast, even, you know, even in the Midwest. And it's just sometimes I think I have the benefit of hearing more than probably most people are introduced to, because I'm always reaching out to different people in different parts of the country and the world. So it's just really interesting hearing. That's why I said this question was just very interesting to me. Because I'm hearing a few names I've heard before, but then I'm hearing, so, okay, I got to check that one out. do you have any that you think of, Patrick, that are underrated or you know, that we...
Yeah, I just remember being 7 years old, being in elementary school in Sacramento, and I remember happening upon Count T. Pelin and some of the work that he's done. And, I was also excited to hear about, you know, from Tiembe, you know, looking at Olio and Paul Lawrence Dunbar and the effect of the young brown skin, you know, student in elementary school, you know, paying attention to Robert Frost and William Butler Yeats and T.S. Eliot, and then seeing these brown faces and some of the most beautiful poetry I've ever heard, like with Count T. Cullen and Human to Another. He has The Ills I Sorrow At, Not Me Alone, Like an Arrow Pierced to the Marrow, Through the Fat and Past the Bone, Your Grief and Mine Must Intertwine, Like the River, Be Fused and Mingle, Diverse Yet Single, Forever and Forever. And just looking at those sweet lines, how short and how, you know, universal they are in their application. And, you know, just, you know, so, you know, a lot of, you know, we talk about a lot of contemporary poets. We talk about a lot of, you know, some of the poets that are unknown, but, you know, even just in the lore of American history, and going back to the very beginning, you know, sometimes you're not, you know, aware of people like Miss Wheatley, or Count T. Cullen, or Paul Lawrence Dunbar. And these are folks that gave me tremendous inspiration early on in reading and reciting and wanting to learn more about poetry and all the different forms that are out there.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you, everybody, for your comments on that. I've learned a few that I have to go back and check out as well. So tell me, of each of you, I would like to know, when did you realize that poetry would be your vehicle of expression?
Well, I'll speak for myself. I started writing poems when I was about 15 or so. And I continued through high school, and then I got dissuaded from it in college because I was going to be a social worker, something along those lines. And I put it like this: it wasn't until I was around in my late 20s, early 30s that I realized that this was what I needed to do as a living.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
I also wrote poetry as a kid, and sort of went into college thinking that's what I wanted to do. And then I got really interested in South Asian studies and went for the PhD, and for a long time thought maybe that was what I was going to do and poetry would just be like a background hobby. But after a couple years in grad school, I actually left the PhD to go do the MFA in creative writing because I felt like I couldn't sort of survive the PhD any longer if I didn't take a break and do poetry again. So now I'm trying to keep them both going, but I did finally figure out that I couldn't just let poetry go.
Same for me, that as a child, I think it may be true for most poets that it's since it has so much to do with the spirit and how we adapt language to conform to what our spirit wants to express. So when I was little, I was drawing and painting and also making poems even before I could read and write. I was making up these rhymes. I grew up with poets. My mom was a poet, and there was a lot of poetry and song in the house, basically, and both in Urdu and English. So I grew up in Pakistan, hearing multiple languages and hearing music and song in multiple languages. My father had a big collection of LPs that he would play. So I grew up with jazz and Bollywood and Urdu ghazals and classical music, you know, from Western classical and Eastern classical. And so I was making up these short rhymes before I could read or write, when I was illiterate, basically. But when I was growing up, my mom was on radio and TV, and she would give me opportunities like, oh, you know, this story, why don't you go and translate this story into Urdu? So I would take a story in English and translate it into Urdu, and back and forth a lot. And so then, you know, then I started writing my own short pieces, poetry in English. And then I started writing poetry in Urdu, which I didn't think was very successful. And then I went back to writing in English. And then I published in Pakistan before I came here as a student, as a college student. I had limited opportunities to publish in Pakistan, as much as I could, I sent my work out and had it published in different newspapers and youth pages. We used to have this thing called a youth page. Every newspaper would have a youth page, and so mm-hmm. I would publish my poems there. And then when I came here to go to Reed College, I came in as a psychology major, but I switched my major to English, and then I went for my MFA, and I thought of poetry very seriously, writing on a regular basis and publishing and so on and so forth. So that's my story.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I was a late bloomer in poetry, but I'll tell you a little thing. It was my family is like yours. My family is, playwrights, authors, poets, musicians, and growing up seeing poets of the day come to the house, and you know, there's always the family days where we had to learn how to recite poetry. We had to recite. We had to memorize. I was a late bloomer. My daughter actually was writing poetry when she was very young. And so I think I never really could find my voice at the time. So I kind of ignored it for a while. But the funniest thing that happened was my daughter wrote poetry. And I remember that one day, the youngest daughter, I picked up something she wrote and it was a cuss word on it. And I was like, oh my God, she's only 8 years old. She's cussing. And I'm like, where did she get this from? I'm like all shocked. And then my older daughter who writes poetry, I'm like, well, you never cuss. And she goes, no, Mom, I write poetry. And so it was really kind of funny when she said that, because I was like, okay. I got it at the time. I said that was her form of expression growing up. And so, and at the same time, it kind of opened up the door in myself. So, that's just learning, hearing about how different people started writing poetry, how people got their voices, is just always very interesting to me. My last question that I have is because I know that most creative individuals, whether they choose to write poetry or whether they paint or whether the creativity comes out in music, that we all have at least one or two or even more creative areas. So what are some of your favorite non-poetry or literature activities?
Shopping?
That could be.
Shopping is creative.
I have a very hard time going to museum stores and not buying anything. You know, I go to museum stores, and I know to have a budget. If I am going to a museum and there's a gift store, I have to decide that, you know, I'm going to have to mm-hmm. have, something to spend over there. So, yeah, I mean, that's Patrick's point about consumerism and capitalism and all that. We have our poets participate in that too, I guess. let me think about a more artsy answer.
But Shadab, you do great or do calligraphy, don't you?
I like calligraphy, and I like to dabble in calligraphy and so on, but I wouldn't call myself an artist, a calligraphic artist. But yes, I think that Urdu penmanship, Urdu calligraphy is a very beautiful form of art, and it is very inspiring. As a poet, I find it very inspiring to just gaze at these, at these art pieces of calligraphy. So yeah, Chloe, thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, and she's a brilliant entrepreneur. I mean, in some way, shape, or form. Some of the events that she puts on at her home for Ghazal readings, I've been to about three of them. They're magical. Mm-hmm. Whether it's just mm-hmm. a group of poets sitting around and sharing with one another and supporting one another, or whether it's more of a formal production and she has a cousin that's, playing the sitar from ancient times and she's reading her Ghazal mm-hmm. poetry. She has a way of producing events that, I don't know if she loves to do it or not, but I know she's exceptional at it. And I know she's very talented mm-hmm. at it.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, you're right. I get a lot of joy and inspiration out of, having my friends together and, having this atmosphere of, art, culture, literature and all of that. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of inspiration to be had from mm-hmm. those moments. But you mentioned being an entrepreneur, and I know that that's something, again, I mentioned shopping, but I've been on the other side too. I have been a businesswoman for a while. And I really enjoyed that too. I had a business. I sold jewelry from different parts of the world, and I realized that I did some of my most favorite pieces of writing while I was buying and selling these pieces of unique jewelry. So yeah, I mean, there's so many mm-hmm. stories and so many tragedies associated with making these artifacts and jewelry, and everything has a story. These objects have stories, right. And participating in that, even as someone who's buying and selling, you become part of that story. And I've written prose about that experience of selling, jewelry from my part of the world in the USA during the time of the Iraq War, and when the Marines would come, and just talking to them and realizing how difficult it was for some of these Marines, especially the women. Marines to be engaged in that war, leaving their families here, young families, babies, babies over here, and going there and being engaged in this very difficult enterprise. For the individual, it is a very difficult thing to do, and as part of the military, as part of their job, they need to have a front which breaks down mm-hmm. when they're talking about that experience, and when in my experience, when the Marines that I spoke to broke down when they saw shawls and scarves and jewelry from that part of the world. I've had experiences that have led to poetry, but they're actually experiences of being an entrepreneur. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Good.
Mm.
And anybody else?
I ride a motorcycle.
All right.
Play a little harmonica, a little guitar. That's about it.
Okay.
I'll volunteer a little bit as well. As I noted, I'm in the world of capitalism in terms of how I, you know, pay my mortgage and my utilities. But I also love being a business creative and being able to fuse, what I'm beginning to do on a professional creative basis with what I do professionally, and being able to put those worlds together. There was a long time where I had a conflict where I was like, you know, you're steeped in the world of capitalism, but you come from professors and you're writing poetry. You know, what does that mean? And it took me a couple of years to kind of get comfortable with the fact that, you know, you're the place, Patrick. If you're comfortable with yourself and what you're doing, you're the place where those two interests kind of merge and you create like a new possibility. So I really love business creativity and merging those two worlds or those two industries together. And I be honest with you, I think more than likely, members that are on the phone today, whether it's Chloe or whether it's Tiembe or whether it's Shadab, as I said earlier today, or even yourself, Celeste, and putting together this platform, we're all business creatives. We may not sit there and give voice to it, but the only reason we have the voice to be able to put out there is we create a platform for ourselves, whether it's, doing applications for grants or doing applications to universities so that we can continue to do the work that we love. It might be kind of a de facto, measure of what we do. But the business creativity is abundantly clear. None of the voices are on here because, some universal source picked them out of the sky and said, I'm putting you here. They're all here because they want to be. And they've designed themselves to be that way. So business creativity is something that I love to do. I love to spend time with my family. That's a source of a lot of energy and my ruminations and that kind of a thing. Drawing. Actually, I've been doing a little bit of drawing, increasingly anticipating doing different types of work in the future where I can fuse the two of those together. So those are some of the things that I like to do outside of writing poetry and reading poetry.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Awesome. That's really good. Thank you all of you. Patrick, I know you probably had a question that you want to ask as well before we get down to the last moment.
Sure. So the couple of questions that were asked today already are dealing with poets and their culture today, also dealing with what do you do to sit there and derive other creative energy. We've also talked about the significance of poetry in today's culture. What type of poems and what type of works are you guys looking to create going into the future? What excites you? What gets you excited about creating? Because, it's a huge undertaking. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of energy. What is the inspiration? What projects do you think about that get you really excited about creating poetry for the next 10, 20, 30 years?
Well, I think I've never had the capacity to think about a project and write poems toward a certain project. I tend to write whenever I have spare moments between other things, and hopefully I'll see themes emerge from what I'm writing and it'll sort of turn into a project. So I tend to not be able to plan what I'm going to write or how, what the theme will be.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay, cool.
Well,
I have similar work habits. I start writing and then I let the poem tell me where it wants to go, whether it wants to become a series of poems, whether it wants to become a book. As far as ambition goes, Patrick, and you mentioned the next 20 or 30 years. Wow, that's a very long term plan. But I like to have that's part of just, being a dreamer. I want to be able to go beyond poetry and maybe figure out other forms that combine narrative poetry and the art of the novel. So I think fiction is very hard to write, and I think that at some point, if I have the capability and if I have the time, I'd like to, write fiction and see how, as a poet, what I can bring to fiction. You know, so yeah, the long-term dream, yeah, that would be it.
Okay.
All right.
Well, for myself, I'm really interested in history. There's a few things from late 19th, early 20th century history that I'm interested in that are fantastic stories that I don't think people have really heard that much about. So I'll leave it at that.
Well, I'll ask you a follow-up question. Do you think that you are a vehicle for the ancestors to express themselves? I mean, I was spending a little bit of time reviewing everybody's work this morning, so I saw your TED Talk. Where you were talking about the twins, and you know your vernacular, the way in which you speak, changes a little bit. Your timbre changes dependent upon who you're talking about. So, do you think that maybe it's possible? You know, and that might harken back to early parts of our conversation today, that you're being used as a vehicle to the ancestors to kind of express their voice in modern times and in the here and now.
Well, I think that. When I'm in the act of writing those poems or doing these projects, I picture myself in conversation with them. I picture myself trying to imagine where they were, what they were thinking, what was going through their lives. Think about all of the issues surrounding them in the world at the time, and I try and think of that, and I go from there. I definitely think of myself as being in conversation with them, and hopefully the conversation is productive.
Obviously, yes.
Yeah,
and then,
well said. Yeah.
No, go ahead, Chloe. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, I was appreciating what you said, and I think I feel the same way about my work. I work with historical themes, and I think that our past has a lot to teach us, a lot of courage, a lot of, and when we talk about the present political moment, and as you mentioned that the struggles that we are facing today were also faced by our ancestors, different points in history. And that has a lot of value, and that has to be passed on to the next generation. So that's another way that we are bridges. You know, poetry and poets act as bridges in time, where we take that inspiration and those stories of conflict, the stories of overcoming challenges, the stories of struggles, and the beauty and the joy and the togetherness. And we take that and we pass it on for the future. So that is one of the things that the roles that I think that we have as poets.
And then I was just going to get back to the point, Shadab, where you'd asked me, you said 20, 30 years. I guess I'm going subconsciously to myself. I tell myself for every year that I've been in banking, which has been about 25 years now, I owe myself a year of writing. So I take
nice.
A lot of inspiration.
I like that.
Thank you. I take a lot of inspiration and camaraderie from the folks that are on the phone right now, Celeste and Shadab, TMB, Chloe. I take a lot of inspiration from you. So when I ask a question in a universal sense, I have a very specific purpose. So you might call me a capitalist, or that was a capitalist question I was asking.
Okay. So would anybody like to share another poem with us as we go out? And I have one more question. Usually the last question I ask is in regards to what would you say to up-and-coming creatives? What type of advice would you give them, big or small, that they could use? Usually we have a lot of people that listen to the program, and I'm always about inspiring people. And so people that may be listening, maybe they're thinking about writing some poetry, maybe they're just thinking about doing something creative. So any type of information that you'd like to give in this last question would be appreciated.
Okay, I would say read a lot. Read the people that that you dig and the people that they dug, and learn your history. Learn the history of the country you live in, or the countries that claim you and that you claim.
Hmm.
Mm.
Okay. Great.
That's well said.
Yes, that's great advice. I'm going to second that. Read a lot. Learn your history. Maybe go do readings, even if you are scared to go read your poetry in public. Go do it, because that's always a great experience to hear your own words, hear other people, see how it feels to say that poetry in community.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a need for deep reading, for learning our histories beyond the sound bites and the fragmented ways that we get our information now. And my advice is just find some quiet time too, even if it's just a, short period in the day, maybe like half an hour, turn your phone off, turn your devices off, just listen to your own inner voice, listen to the silence and learn from it, be in touch with your spirit, even if you have just a few minutes for it, give that little gift to yourself every day. It enhances the quality of your creative work, and it enhances your health and your relationship with others. When you're in touch with yourself, you become better at being in touch with your loved ones and with the world in general.
Great.
Yeah.
I love all that, because I always have a time when I say check your phone at the door. No phones allowed. Check your phone at the door.
Right.
So I like that. Patrick, do you have anything?
I would say listen to the quality of this conversation and the diversity of backgrounds. I mean, we've basically demonstrated what it is that we've spoken about in terms of talking about bridges. I mean, we have so many different backgrounds. Culturally, spiritually, religiously, and yet there's a musicality to the conversation that's taking place. So, conversely, in addendum to what it is Shadab talked about, taking, special time with oneself, with one's spiritual energy, and tuning into that frequency and really honoring that, and not getting involved in all the noise and clutter. There's also camaraderie to be had that is, writer seems to have a group of readers that they work with, writers that inspire them. And going back to Chloe's point, going out to poetry readings and spending time with the folk that inspire you, whether, it's listening to that poetry or it's reading that poetry, going back to Yembe's point, really kind of honor the community. It's a solo endeavor. And there's something spiritual and magical that happens in that moment, and that's magical. But it's also very spiritually reinforcing and gratifying to spend time with other poets that know what it takes to conjure that magic and the work that goes into creating that expression.
Okay. Great. And would anybody like to share another poem with us before we go?
Patrick, how about you?
My goodness.
Something from the new book.
Book, which I can do momentarily. Give me a second. I'm embarrassed. I don't have it in proximity to myself. But if you give me a couple seconds, I'll find something to read it out loud.
Sam, but maybe you could read one more while Patrick is getting ready.
Yes.
Okay. I think I can do that. How about something from, I think I have one. This is from, this is one of the Jubilee singers, Isaac Dickerson, who lived from 1852 to 1900. It's Jubilee. We boil the air with hallelujah's balm, because each of us got a story to yell out in song. Mine starts with my lonesome crying in the dark. Father whispered, they're going to sell me in the morning, son. By 5 years old, I was orphaned. By 9, it was war. I got conscripted by the Rebs. They told me Yanks weren't fit to live. that they fought for raping and pillaging nigger skin. That free will was just a trap, a deck of cards stacked against black. Well, now I full see what they ain't want me to believe. It's a far sight better than those chains they held us hostage. We burned down Dixie's shack with our palace of freed voice.
Okay.
Wow.
All right.
Awesome.
And I found something. Thank you, Tiamba, for that. Thank you, sir. And then I found something in honor of National Poetry Month and also the work that we did in our conversation, blessing one another today. It's called A Poem, A Power. Not but a short time ago, we did not even know one another. Now we are family. In the tradition of what was Africa proper, we have formed legacies and crafted a tradition anew, pure. Rise is the rhythm pounding my heart in metronome time. As visions fill my mind, power my spirit. The future is not here, but arriving hot.
Great. I like that.
It's a great closing
for us, because here at Vertical Life, we are everyone that we've ever had on our program, we do consider family. We would love to have any of you back to talk some more about poetry and what you're doing, most definitely. And I just want to thank you for taking the time out with us today. And as I said in the beginning, I mean, it's National Poetry Month, and poetry is every time, is always, forever, every day. looking forward to seeing what you're doing in your life with your poetry. And with those that you touch. So thank you again for being on our program today.
Thank you, Celeste.
Thank you.
And thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Celeste.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
All right, folks.
And everyone, thank you again for being our audience on Vertical Life Radio, A Taste of Ink Live. We appreciate you. We appreciate our fans. We appreciate our supporters. Thank you for Team Vertical for volunteering and planning and production of this program today. And you'll be able to hear this program later today at Blog Talk Radio, Renaissance Cafe, A Taste of Ink Live. And again, we appreciate your time. So our guest today has been Kule Martinez, and has Tishimbe Jeff, and Shadab Hashmi. So thank you again for our guests. This has been Vertical Live. And we leave our program with Eyes Wide by Six Man and the producer, Tommy Bummels. Thank you.
Above average, I'm a savage.
Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else. Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else. Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else. Keep my eyes wide in the daytime as well. Kept me focused on what's real and nothing else.
Me and Tommy together's like P-Rock, I see L Smooth, a DJ Premier with Guru. Yo, it's tangible. We too hard, you can't handle us. Hate paparazzi in the camera.